Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Edvest in You, a local New Hampshire nonprofit providing college student loans and student refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own-farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It's not your imagination. More people are dying on New Hampshire's roadways. The latest numbers show a 22% increase in traffic fatalities over the same period last year. And the news this summer especially seems full of heartbreaking stories about lives cut short in accidents, mostly involving cars, but also motorcycles, bicycles, and pedestrians. Today in The Exchange, we ask why and what it will take to turn this trend around. Later in the hour, New Hampshire's 2nd Congressional District is our focus. We'll talk over the next few weeks with primary candidates in that district. Our guest today will be Republican Brian Bellinger. Let's hear from you now, your experiences, questions, comments on this increase in highway fatalities. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We have two guests. Captain William Haynes is here, commander of the New Hampshire Office of Highway Safety. He worked for many years patrolling state highways. And Captain Haynes, it's really nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Laura, for having us here today.
Also with us, Marilyn Costa. She serves on the New Hampshire Traffic Safety Commission and is the secretary of the New Hampshire Drivers Education Teachers Association. She's a former driver's ed teacher herself. And Marilyn, really nice to meet you, too. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, the big question for both of you, and Marilyn, I'll turn to you first. Why is this happening?
All the distractions on the road, all the speeds, all the changes. So much for everyone to deal with.
When you say all the changes, what do you mean?
The road construction. You can go down a road one day and the lanes are one position. You can go down it half hour later and it's been changed. And it's confusing everybody.
So distraction, speed, changes in the roadways. What else, Marilyn, do you think might be contributing to this? It's really just heartbreaking to read these stories, you know, week after week.
It's just happening.
What do you think, Captain Haynes?
I think it's kind of a cocktail of things going on here today. Obviously, we have the predominant one for fatalities, which is alcohol and drug impaired driving.
Still.
We still continue to battle that day in and day out. We also have distractions in all forms, not just handheld electronic devices. And we have speed. Speed has been a primary factor in a lot of our fatalities. You take any one of those in combination or in all three, and you have a recipe for disaster on our roadways.
So agreeing with Marilyn there, it's distraction, it's speed, and a couple other factors, impairment, that we've seen for a long time. Impairment meaning drugs or alcohol.
Yes.
So drugs and alcohol have been a factor for a long, long time. What changes have you seen, Captain Haynes, in your many years patrolling the highways in terms of how people drive?
Basically, we've got more distractors introduced into our environment when we're driving down the road. I mean, you've got the technology in the automobiles themselves. You add in handheld electronic devices, whether it be, you know, cell phones or iPods or any of those types of GPS devices, and now you have more people looking away from what they're primarily supposed to be focused on, which is just driving.
Does that drive you crazy?
It is. At times it does. When you see it happening, you ask yourself, how does this become a norm in our society?
Has it become a norm to stare down at your lap while you're driving?
Recently, as a result of some of the enforcement efforts, we found that people they're not holding the phone to the side of the ear or talking on the phone like they once were. They found other ways because this has become a norm. This is a behavioral thing with them that they actually continue to, you know, one out of three people are on social media while driving. So.
Wait a second. One out of three people are on social media while they're driving?
Yes, they are. And that's the stats that are coming from both the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and other agencies that track those particular stats.
Marilyn, my jaw is just dropping, and I'm having a hard time putting it back. One out of three people are on social media while they're driving.
Yes, they are.
So what do you say to students about that? I know you're not a driver's ed teacher anymore, but you used to be.
Yes, I taught 25 years.
Wow.
You put the phone in the back seat. You shut it off. It's not that important. That text, that Facebook post can all wait. Your life is more important.
So people have been making that message for a while now, and the state has a law that says, you know, no looking at handheld devices while driving. But based on what Captain Haynes is telling us, it doesn't seem to be working, Marilyn. So we can say what
worse.
You just said, but yeah, go ahead.
It could be worse.
It could be everybody. Still, based on what he just said, it seems like that message that you gave your students, that I certainly give, you know, my driving teenager, don't look at it, it doesn't seem to be getting through.
Look at life. We have fast cars, fast-paced life. We have everything, all the new devices in cars. Everybody has to be somewhere fast. I've got to juggle everything, and they don't think that driving, I can handle driving, but I can handle my cell phone too. I can multitask, when in reality, you can't. You're driving with the left side of your brain, and when you're texting, you're on social media, it's with that part of the brain also. Even if you're just talking to someone on the phone, it's still taxing the left side of your brain.
That's really interesting what you said. We're a multitasking society, and we assume we can multitask while driving, and you're saying we can't.
No.
What do you think, Captain Haynes?
Well, if you look at some of the studies that have been done with multitasking and some of the data that I've been reading, it said that only 1 in 10 can actually multitask, even though all of us believe we're great multitaskers. In reality, 1 in 10.
I know I'm not actually, because I burn the toast all the time, but go ahead.
Yeah, that's a significant problem. I don't think anybody, if you ask the general audience, can you multitask, most of us would always say, yes, we can. But in reality, when it comes to brain function, only 1 in 10, according to the data, are able to truly multitask.
So same question for you, Captain Haynes, please, that I asked Marilyn. You know, she gives the message to her students. I'm sure all driver's ed teachers give that message to their students. There's billboards on the highway. New Hampshire has a law, for goodness sake, saying don't do this. But you said 1 in 3 people does this anyway on social media while they drive. So why is that? And what do you do to reduce those numbers?
Well, as you know, the laws are in place here in New Hampshire since 2015. And last year's data showed that we reissued 9,868 summonses to personnel on the roadway for actually using a handheld electronic device, which is just one form of that distraction. Interestingly enough, 251 of those were repeat offenders. This is severely underreported because 25% of our crashes, as data shows for 2017, involve some type of distraction, with handheld only being one of those types of distraction. This is something that's become, again, acceptable behavior. I look at this from the same aspect we looked at drug and alcohol impaired driving and smoking, for example. You know, we were a society of smokers back when I was younger, where everybody smoked. And through a media campaign, through education, and through a number of efforts, we were able to reduce the smoking down. We've got to do the same thing with not only just handheld electronic devices, but all distractions, speed, and with drugged and alcohol impaired driving.
Well, I definitely want to ask both of you about speed and impaired driving, but a couple more questions on the electronic distractions, since that seems to be fueling at least part of this increase that we're seeing. So, Captain Haynes, you said it's difficult to, you know, catch everybody on this. 9,000 citations sounds like a lot, but it sounds like there's more possibly out there, and that a lot of these people were repeat offenders. So when someone is a repeat offender, like, what happens to them? Do they get fined heavily? Do they get, you know, a slap on the wrist? I mean, what happens?
For each subsequent offense, the fines increase. And then at some point, depending on the driving record, we may have to get to the director of motor vehicle to take some type of action to bring that individual into a hearing, for example, to determine whether they should continue to be operating on our roadways if they are not, their behavior is not changing. So.
And does that number, the 9,000 citations or tickets or whatever it might be, is that just highways, Commander Haynes? Excuse me, Captain Haynes?
No, it's all roadways.
All roadways, okay.
It is. And what you're seeing is a partnership between state, county, and local law enforcement who go out with a lot of, with funding from NHTSA on an overtime patrols to try to reduce the number of fatalities and serious bodily injury, and specifically on distracted driving. and they go out and they patrol all of our roadways in New Hampshire to try to minimize it.
All right. I want to invite our listeners to join us. The number is 1-800-892-6477. And today in the exchange, we're looking at an alarming rise in New Hampshire traffic deaths. The latest figures, as we're hearing, show fatalities up 22% from the same period last year. We're taking a look behind the numbers at why this may be happening. And let's hear from you. What do you see out on the roadways? How about your own driving behavior? Do you find yourself driving faster or more distracted these days? 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. One more time, that number for you to join us on your comments and questions about the increase in highway deaths in traffic fatalities in New Hampshire, 1-800-892-6477. Well, phones get all the attention, and certainly those numbers that Captain Haynes cited about 1 in 3 people is doing social media while they're driving are concerning. But what other types of distraction, Marilyn, do you see and did you used to talk to your students about?
I would talk to them about their emotions, what they see, what's going on around. They might see a friend walking down the street that they've had an argument with and want to yell and scream at them, and road rage and all kinds of things that you deal with. When your young person is learning to drive, they have observed your driving for almost 16 years. From the second you turn that car seat around, they're watching how the parent, the grandparent, the aunts and the uncles and everyone drive. So we as adults, if we set a better example, we can help our future generation of drivers. But look at all the new devices in the cars. Look at the GPS. Look at the lane departure warning. Look at the early braking system. Look at everything that's in a car. My vehicle that I'm driving today doesn't even need a key. I just need the paddle in the car, and I push the button. It's different. Look at in the wintertime, we have four-wheel drive vehicles. We assume our vehicle can drive on snow as it did in the summertime, and it doesn't. Everything changes.
Do you think GPSs are helpful in terms of distraction or not helpful? Because as a person with no sense of direction, by the way, I really enjoy having someone else tell me where to go.
It helps, but it can also confuse you. If it's not up to date, it could have you turning on a road that's been changed recently.
And the screens that some cars have, so it isn't just the GPS on your phone. It's an actual screen in the car. Shows you if you're backing up out of a parking lot, you're going to hit something. Okay,
yes.
That sounds good. So what about that? Is that distracting or is that helpful?
It also has on it the rear cameras. It says, check your environment. It's not just pay attention to that. Look around. It helps me when I'm backing into a parking place. It makes it so I can see the lines. I know how my vehicle is centered. But it doesn't help me if a kid is going to run behind me. And I should be watching for that.
With your own eyeballs.
You bet.
Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You too, Captain Haynes, real quick. Electronic devices get all the attention and understood because this is a new element. But what other types of distraction do you see?
Well, I think we've all heard the stories. I mean, there's people shaving on the way to work because they're in a hurry to get where they're at. They're running late. We've seen people reading books, newspapers.
Wait. Reading books?
Actually, I've seen a number of cases where people have actually had books on their steering wheel reading or Kindles while driving down the roadway. It's been seen by many of us.
I mean, it's I'm laughing, but it's sad. Really? Reading a book while you drive?
It appears that driving isn't as attentive as they want it to be, and they have some other things they need to accomplish. But it is, it's you know, the dogs, the animals, the pets that you find that are on their laps that are jumping around in the windows. These are distractions that we've, that have become common, and they are, in fact, a distraction. Driving down a highway with a small dog in your lap bouncing around in a window while you're trying to operate a motor vehicle in and of itself is a distraction. we're a society of fast food restaurants. We're constantly stopping and getting fast food, and which in and of itself isn't bad, other than the fact that when you drop that coffee or that burger or that French fry, and it takes your eyes off the road to figure out, you know, where it went, or you're reaching for that next item in the bag, that in and of itself is 2 to 3 seconds of distraction.
Well, lots more questions about distracted driving, and I do want to get into the issue of impaired driving, also speeds, and some solutions that you folks might see. But let's go to our listeners, too. Lots of questions and comments about why we're seeing the increase in traffic fatalities, deaths, you know, involving mostly cars, but also motorcycles, bicyclists, pedestrians. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. And in Nashua, Patricia's on the air. Hi, Patricia. Go ahead. You're on the exchange. Patricia, you're there. You're on the exchange. Go ahead. Okay. I guess we lost Patricia. Again, the number, 1-800-892-6477. Let's try John in Tilton. Hi, John. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. How you doing, sir?
Good.
Quick question involving police presence on the highways. I feel like I could be seeing more. I work with my dad doing accident reconstruction, and we often cover a lot of fatalities that involve blind corners, misread signs, signs that weren't even seen beforehand because like a piece of brush or a tree was covering it up. So I think police presence could definitely be increased, but I also wanted to mention that the state should definitely try and implement some new sanctions with licensing. I think people should be able to come back and retake their test every so many years to prove that they still know how to drive on the road.
So if you could hang on, John, this is really interesting. You do accident reconstruction. Can you tell me more about that?
So we use very complicated mathematical algorithms to determine who is at fault in a crash. This could be anyone who might be impaired, who might have been distracted at the time, who may not know what they were doing. but essentially, in the end, we're able to prove who was at fault, how it happened, how fast they were going, if they were wearing their seatbelt, whether or not the airbag deployed. We could tell you anything.
Wow, that's fascinating. So what are the common denominators, John, that keep coming up for you?
Really, it is distraction. And most often, strangely enough, I do see that most roadway signs have not been updated. And one of the people on the board there, they mentioned that it also has something to do with GPS. Those definitely need to be updated for sure. But it really is, it comes down to people being distracted firsthand.
Well, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, that's all right. Essentially, people need to be aware that it's not just their lives that are at stake, it's everyone else's. And they should have learned that in driver's ed. And if that's not something that people are stressing enough when they're teaching driver's ed, no offense to, sorry, I forgot her name. anyways.
Well, John, it's great to hear from you, given that you work in this field. Really interesting. And Marilyn, real quickly, how much do driver's ed teachers stress this distraction issue?
We have the kids in the classroom for 30 hours, and then we have them in the car for 10 hours behind the wheel and 10 hours of observation. As far as distractions go, I will try to distract them and see how they handle it.
Oh, that's interesting. So while you're in the car with them, you'll try to distract them and you see
sure
how open they are to that distraction.
Yes, and we'll discuss it. And they may be in the front seat. They may be in the back seat. You know, I may cue my phone to ring and see how they handle it.
That's a really interesting tactic. All right, John, great to hear from you. And more of your calls after a short break, 1-800-892-6477. We'll also talk about impairment coming up. Also, New Hampshire's lack of a mandatory seatbelt law and motorcycle helmet law, how much of a difference that may be making. Also, look more at solutions. Keep us here. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. I'm Laura Kanoy. The exchange has been going local all summer, exploring the unique regions of New Hampshire. And as part of our series, we'll be heading to Keene, the heart of the Monadnock region, to discuss the biggest issues facing that area and what residents love most about their home. The show will be live at Keene State College on August 16th at 9 a.m. So reserve your free tickets now at nhpr.org/events. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, traffic fatalities are on the rise, and we're looking at why, what some solutions might be. What are you seeing on the roads nowadays in terms of driver behavior? And how about your own driving habits? Have they changed in recent years with electronics in the car and the speed limits on some roads going up? Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. We'd like to hear your stories and your possible solutions to reducing this alarming rise in New Hampshire traffic deaths. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And Captain Haynes, before we go back to our listeners, I did want to ask you a little bit more about impairment, what we used to just call drunk driving, but now we need to add drugs, both legal and illegal. Now, as you said earlier, this has always been a factor. But has this gone up? Has it gone down? What changes have you seen?
The increase in impaired driving has been significant over the last couple of years due to the influx of the drug driving epidemic or drugs epidemic that we're going through in the state. What's really interesting is when you see a mixture of both drugs and alcohol that are causing some of the fatalities on the road. You know, under the influence, you know, a BAC of 0.8 or higher, last year statistics showed we had 11 fatalities that had died as a result of alcohol alone.
BAC is blood alcohol content.
Right.
Yeah.
And then there were 11 others that had alcohol and drugs.
Yeah.
In the system.
Has the opioid crisis affected highway fatalities, more people driving while under the influence of opioids, or not so much?
The perception is that it has, but statistically we haven't been able to really lock in a concrete number as to that being a prominent factor. Looking at the way that the crashes are analyzed, much as John had said, through the car and then through the lab here in New Hampshire, we work diligently to try to ascertain what caused that crash. And it really gets down to the coroner's diagnosis as to why that person may have, you know, passed away as a result of that crash.
So correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like the campaign against drunk driving had some success, at least a while back, you know, more and more people saying, I'm the designated driver, people hiring Uber to drive them home if they'd been drinking too much. Is that success still standing, or are we seeing a backslide of that?
No, I think things are still going as they have been in the last couple of years. I don't see an increase in people utilizing it as much. I don't know that here in New Hampshire we have the ability or we utilize those types of modes of transportation as often as we should. We just did a press release recently where NHTSA has an app that would help some of those people who did choose to go out and over the holidays and have a few drinks that they could put onto their cell phone and try to contact a friend or contact a cab or, you know, maybe contact an Uber device. So there's a lot of efforts going forward to have people make the right decision and make the right choices when they've taken the opportunity to go out.
Let's take another call. And Dan's joining us from New Boston. Go ahead, Dan. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for your public service. That's what I consider it, because I find it very bizarre that someone who wouldn't dream of breaking the law will text and drive or talk on the phone and drive. And I've witnessed this numerous times. I've had some close calls on the back roads of New Hampshire. What I mean by the back roads are like Route 13, where the roads are hilly and curved, and, you know, you have a bad field of vision to begin with. So I just wanted to add a comment, and, you know, I'm a retired public works, and safety has always been a huge concern of mine, and that's probably how I got to retire, because I've witnessed some, and I've been involved with accidents in the bad weather in this part of the country, in the ice and whatnot. So I just wanted to say thanks and appreciate the show. Thank you.
Okay. Well, Dan, thank you very much for calling in. Some emails are coming in as well. Christine says, I have noticed increasingly that drivers seem to be more aggressive, following too closely, passing dangerously, speeding. I feel this is in relation to an overall increase in aggression, lack of empathy, etc. Christine, thank you for that email. And that's something you mentioned earlier, Marilyn, not so much aggression, you said, but people are more in a hurry. And I'd love for you to elaborate on that a little bit.
We're all in a hurry. It's a high-paced, high-fast lifestyle that we live. We have 5 minutes between one job to another. We have to pick kids up. We have to drop them off. We're on a time schedule. Life is fast these days for everyone, no matter where you're going, what you're doing. Kids leave school, and they have to be from Derry to Hooksett in 20 minutes to be on the ice to practice hockey, because that's when it's scheduled ice time. It's not the kids' fault. It's not the coach's fault, but that's how we live.
So rushing to get from one place to the other. People
exactly.
have a lot of activities. Things are spread out here in New Hampshire.
Yes.
And you see that sort of personal
Always.
Timetable going up.
Yes. You get home from work. You have to pick one child up to take them to football practice. You have to have another one at the soccer field. And you're a single parent. You know, our kids had both parents that could be, we could split up and be places.
Well, things are seem more spread out, especially with the sports, travel teams,
yes.
and so forth. What about her broader point that there's a level of aggression in society today? She says a lack of empathy in society today, and she sees that playing out on the roadways. What do you think, Marilyn?
I think it's crazy that we get behind the wheel angry, unhappy with the world, and angry. Unhappy with everything that's going on, no matter what it is. Grocery store, you know? I have to go to the grocery store, and everybody's crazy in there. You know, you come out and you're unhappy.
Well, you could also use, I guess, one of those new pickup services that
yes.
they have. Maybe that would
Whole
help
Foods,
a little bit.
Yes.
But that's a whole nother show. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Christine, thank you for the email. Jules is joining us from Winchester. Hi, Jules. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. I just wanted to talk about the road conditions in general. I grew up in Ackworth, which is kind of like a backwoods town most people probably haven't heard of. And we have a lot of state routes that go through Ackworth. And what I notice is that a lot of the money for the roads goes towards the seacoast and the highways, and they forget about these little towns with windy, windy roads. So you got people going around corners trying to avoid all the potholes and the bumps, trying to save their cars. And they're really sharp corners that you can't see around the corner. And then someone comes from the other direction, and that's dangerous. Or, you know, you have someone going really slow to try and avoid the bumps, and someone comes around the corner in the same lane and has to slam on their brakes. You know,
well,
I think that's kind of a distraction as well.
Jules, this is a great point. And Captain Haynes, I did want to ask you, you know, what are the differences that you see between the big state highways that are, you know, pretty well maintained, Interstate 93, 89, versus the smaller roads and highways of New Hampshire? Are there differences in terms of safety?
There is. And I think the best advice I could give somebody, and I know that the Department of Transportation works really hard to get out and to improve all the state roadways. And obviously, it's a matter of having the manpower and also the funding to do that. But I will say this, that she brings up a very valid point. And what I would recommend is that when you're on roadways like that, there's a thing we commonly refer to as operating based on the conditions in which you're driving, you'll drive based on those conditions, which means even if it is 30, 35 miles an hour, if the roads don't permit it, then you really need to take the time to slow down and not so much for your car, but for your own personal safety. She brings up a very valid point. And I think a lot of people, as Marilyn has said, are in so much of a hurry that, you know, they're traversing these roadways in too fast. And the roadways aren't in the state of repair that allow them to do that. So don't just focus on the speed limit sign. Focus on your ability to operate that motor vehicle safely on that conditioned roadway.
So if the speed limit sign says 45 on this smaller roadway, you're saying, don't just say, okay, I'm going 45. Look at the conditions and so forth.
Correct.
What are some of the changes that you've seen in recent years on the actual physical structure of the roads, Captain Haynes, that could make them a little bit safer? I travel Route 9 a lot, for example, and those bumps now that they have on the sides of the road and in the middle of the road to prevent, to warn a driver that he or she is drifting, those I have heard have been very helpful in making that road safer.
Yeah, a few years ago, they started putting those into the roadways, especially in the center line, the rumble strips in the center
line. Rumble strips, that's what you call them, right.
And those have been really successful in catching people's attention. The downside to that is if you live in a neighborhood who has those, sometimes you get some complaints from the residents that those are, you know, disturbing. However, the trade-off is public safety. And if you listen to, if you happen to live on a roadway at 3, 4, 5, 6 in the morning when people are out early and they have those strips and you have the atmosphere, as you know, in the morning it's very quiet. It's amazing how many cars that I can hear crossing over on Route 28 and hitting those rumble strips that early in the morning, which is a testament as to whether they should be driving at that point in time. Are they fully awake? Did they get enough sleep? If they're crossing those centerline rumble strips when there is no traffic on the roadway, something's going on. Either it's drowsiness, it's distraction, what's going on that's causing them to do that? And what I find fascinating is they won't cross them just once, but you can hear it well off into the roadway, they'll cross it more than once. And this is with no traffic on the roadways early in the morning.
Wow, that's fascinating. So in a way, it's a little bit terrifying that they don't just hit that rumble strip and go, oh, wake up. But they're hitting it repeatedly. On the other hand, it does show you that they're keeping the roads a little bit safer.
They are. They're catching their attention and putting them back into the roadway, which is critical for avoiding head-on collisions.
Well, Jules, thank you so much for the call. It's an important point. And to Mason, where Scott is on the line. Hi, Scott. Go ahead. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, Laura. Firstly, I love your program. I enjoy it all the time.
Good. Thank you, Scott.
I ride the bus from Nashua, New Hampshire to South Station in Boston, you know, daily for work. And you would not believe what you see from up high in the bus. I mean, it's incredible. You can look down into the cars or out the front window of the bus, and numerous people are just texting away, playing with their phones. It's incredible. I mean, I've even seen a person on a motorcycle texting, and we're talking at speed on Route 3, on 95, on 93, on 90. It's incredible.
Wow. And you kind of wonder, Scott, like, A, why is that person doing it? But B, why aren't they being pulled over for that? It's really interesting. Thank you so much, Scott. And Captain Haynes, I do have to ask you, I mean, you know, there's so many people doing this, as both you and Marilyn have said. You can't possibly pull everybody over for doing that, even when it's as, you know, crazy as doing it on a motorcycle.
That's correct. I mean, again, I mean, if you see the cell phone and you can articulate that you saw the individual with the phone, then it's easy to pull them over and issue a citation for that law. Unfortunately, people have become more, I don't want to use the word smarter, but they've become more clever. And then, so now they're dropping them down in their laps. So it becomes very difficult from a law enforcement perspective to articulate that you saw them on a cell phone or a mobile electronic device or handheld electronic device. Unless you can articulate that something they were doing, whatever behavior they were doing, was causing them to operate erratically, and you have the ability to have, you know, reasonable suspicion or doubt to pull them over for a motor vehicle violation, your hands are tied. I can look at them and I consciously know that's probably what they're doing. However, I would not be able to articulate that to support whatever summons I would issue.
Well, and Scott, thank you for calling. I've even seen people bicycling and, you know, texting or looking at their phones at the same time. So I appreciate what you're saying. Here's an email from Sally. Do your guests believe the speed increases on I-93 need to go back to 65 miles per hour where they were raised? I never drove 65, Sally says, because I want to save gas, and I still normally drive 55 miles per hour, and most vehicles are passing me at much higher speeds. Sally, thank you for the email, and I did want to ask you both about speed. Marilyn, you first. What's the ethic around going the speed limit these days? You know, that 65 miles an hour, is that viewed as a suggestion? Is it viewed as a rule? How do people view that these days?
I think they look at it as a suggestion to be around it, when in reality they should be driving it. The Transportation Committee Department set that for reasons. And they know the roads, they check the roads, they look at everything before a speed limit is set or changed.
I have heard driver's ed teachers tell kids, go with the flow of traffic. And if the flow of traffic is going 70, you should go 70. It's actually not safe to go 60 or 55, as Sally says.
I say go the speed limit. It's there for a reason,
go
and that's what I always taught. The parents would get the kids in the car and say, it's all right to go 5 over, 10 over.
5 over, that's what everybody seems to say. Yeah,
and it's not. I taught, drive the speed limit. It's there for a reason.
So if everybody else is going 70
let them
or
pass you.
75, which seems to be the case, should you still go 65 with everybody whizzing by you?
I would. Let them go. Let them pass me.
Is that still safe?
They're going to pass. I'm on I'm on Interstate 93. I'm on 89. Let them go by me.
Captain Haynes, Sally, our emailer, specifically asked about those areas of New Hampshire that were raised from 65 to 70. Now, the only one I'm familiar with is north of Canterbury on Interstate 93. I don't know if it's 70 anywhere else in the state. But from a safety perspective, how did you feel about that 5-mile-an-hour increase from 65 to 70 a couple years ago?
The 5-mile-an-hour increase, obviously, when you start doing time and distance calculations, when it relates to distraction, it could have an impact, but 5 miles an hour in of itself is not real significant. The issue that at hand for me is that it becomes, if 10 miles an hour over the speed limit was the norm at 65, then they're going to continue in that learned behavior to do 10 miles an hour over the speed limit at 70, now making it 80. So now you have more of a significant impact at speed, time, and distance whenever distraction's involved. The increase in the speed limit in and of itself is, I don't think, is a significant impact on fatalities or crashes in the state. I think it's how we've learned or what we have as an acceptable norm for speeds. You know, whether we're one of those people who follow the speed limit, or we're 5 over, or we're 10 over. When I speak to people and we do surveys throughout the state, most New Hampshire residents think it's okay to do 10 miles an hour over the speed limit. In reality, it's not. The speed limit on the highways is the posted speed limit. It's there for a reason.
So is it problematic then to raise it to 70 because then the norm, so to speak, becomes 80? And that sounds pretty fast in New Hampshire.
It is fast in New Hampshire. And again, the reason for raising it to 70 were for other economic reasons and traffic and things of that nature. So I don't feel that 70 in and of itself is the issue. I think it's people's acceptance. Those people who were doing 75 when it was 65 can still do 75 when it's 70. That's a conscience choice.
But they'll probably do 80.
They'll probably do 80.
Let's close out with one more call. Cynthia is joining us from Bridgewater. Hi, Cynthia. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for taking my call. Good morning. My thesis would be not only defensive driving, but politeness, courtesy. And if you drive somewhat defensively, that means you're aware of what others are, you're trying to be aware of what other people are doing. You're considerate of what's going on around you and those folks out there. You're all part of the same team in a way. You're all out there together. And I think a little, again, politeness and courtesy can go a long way towards safety.
Wow, we're all part of the same team. I love that, Cynthia. A lot of people get behind the wheel and it's like it's me versus that guy. So what a way to think about it. Thank you so much, Cynthia. What do you think, Marilyn?
I love that idea because we are all on the same team.
Well, both of you, hard to believe. We have to close it out here, and there's a bunch more we could have talked about. But thank you so much for being here. It was good to meet you, Marilyn. Thank you.
It was great to meet you. Thank you for having me.
That's Marilyn Costa. She serves on the New Hampshire Traffic Safety Commission. She's a former driver's ed teacher. Captain Haynes, it was good of you, too, to come in. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity, Laura.
Captain William Haynes, commander of New Hampshire's Office of Highway Safety. He worked for many years patrolling New Hampshire's highways. Now, coming up, we'll talk with Brian Belanger. He's running in the Republican primary for the 2nd Congressional District. So keep it right here. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org or subscribe to our podcast. Search Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Stitcher for NHPR Exchange.